Millerton resident Peter Richmond is a renowned sports writer whose work has appeared in The New Yorker, The New York Times Magazine, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, among many others. His journalism has been included in a dozen different anthologies, including Best American Sports Writing of the 20th Century. His previous books include The Glory Game with co-author Frank Gifford and Badasses. In his new biography is Phil Jackson, The Lord of the Rings. Richmond gives an account in the book of the life of the legendary coach of the Los Angeles Lakers and the Chicago Bulls. He'll be speaking Saturday at Oblong Books at 6 p.m. in Millerton, and he joins us this morning on the Roundtable. Peter Richmond, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, Joe, I appreciate your interest. Thanks for having me.
It's very nice to have you here. What did you find fascinating about this man?
The thing you'd expect me to say is that he was so deep. Actually, I went in because he's got this image, and it's a real one, of being learned, mystical, steeped in many, many faiths and philosophic searches, and that he'd sort of broken the mold. And instead, I came out knowing all of that was true, but he's also the most insane competitor on the face of the earth. And so, instead of doing a bio of a guy who's like won more rings than any coach in history,
right,
and finding out that he has all these other dimensions, I knew he had all these other dimensions because he's already written like four or five books of his own. And so I didn't expect to come out knowing, having talked to so many players and friends and guys like that who were saying, yeah, well, you're leaving out the fact that he can't stand to lose. So that really is what I found.
You have a lifelong friend tells you, I still don't know who he is. You can't nail him.
Correct. I think there are two ways of seeing that. One is that he is smart enough to know that as a head coach, and he did win 11 rings, which is more than anyone in history will ever win, that to play all your cards, to show your hand, is always a mistake. To be mystical or to be mysterious is to your advantage. There is, if he comes back, the insiders and the outsiders, and that's basically the insiders are him, his coaches, his trainer, and his players. That's it. That's the inside. Outside of that, including his bosses in the front offices, they're outsiders, and they are not privy to the inner circle. So that's kind of a metaphor for how even his best friends of years can say you can't pin him down, because he will not show himself. Now, I think the other side to that, having spent more than 2 years on this book and interviewed so many people, is that he's still trying to find out who he is, which is a good thing. One of the reasons I think he was a successful coach is he was never satisfied with what he already knew. And whether he was searching for new ways to see basketball or new ways to see Buddha, he's always searching. The result of that is, I think if you were to sit down with him over 8 beers and finally say, Phil, who the hell are you? He'd say, I'm not sure. And I think a great example of that is that a friend of his told me that after he had been, he's been with Jeannie Buss, the Lakers business director, for many, many, many years after his long-term marriage broke up. And then out of the blue last year, about a year ago, he proposed to her after, a decade of just not being married. And a friend said, Phil, why'd you decide to suddenly do this? And he emailed her and said, yeah, I kind of surprised myself. Mm. In other words, he woke up one day and said, geez, I think I'm going to propose to Jeannie today. So I think when people who know him well say, you still don't know who he is, it's partly because he doesn't. And again, I say that's a good thing because as we grow old, and I'm not quite as old as he, but it's kind of a good thing to try to reinvent yourself all the time, don't you think?
And I don't know even if it's a reinvention or as much as it is a maturation, and
right,
you're trying to find out where you fit in the new phase of your life, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's how you stay young, really. And it's kind of funny because you think of Phil, his second wife of 2 decades, was his age. Jeannie's much younger, and yet Phil is young. I mean, physically, he's 68 or 69. But psychologically, even in the times I haven't interviewed him in 12, 15 years, but I interviewed him a lot in the past years, it always struck me how young he was in terms of searching. And Jeannie, while, you know, in years much younger, is also, I'm told, very wise beyond her years. And so in a way, he's finding a way to stay young. And, of course, playing in a league with players far younger than you, I mean, coaching in a league with players far younger than you, and having those players be perhaps above average in terms of intellectual curiosity, maturity, et cetera, helps keep him young, too. His players, everybody knows that he had Shaquille and Kobe and Michael and Scotty.
Right.
What people forget is that those supporting casts for all 11 of those teams included some remarkably deep and interesting young men.
So with that said, let me ask this question about players, and for you as an author and an interviewer of going to those former players, how much introspection do you get from them about this guy from, as you say, there's the inside and the outside. So from that inside as a coach and as a person.
There's a pretty good barometer for that. My previous book was about the Oakland Raiders of the 1970s, excuse me, who finally won a Super Bowl after years of coming close under a coach named John Madden, who in many ways coached like Phil in that he gave his players total respect. But most of the Raiders I interviewed from the 70s, when we talked about the success of those teams and why they finally went over the top, few of them went on and on about John Madden and how he'd changed their lives. They went on about how he'd made them feel like they were part of a team, and he made them feel, since he treated them like men instead of boys, that they wanted to play real hard for him every Sunday. Did those guys, the Oakland Raiders of the 70s, go on to make lots of differences in the world? No diss on them. They're athletes, but no. Now, flash forward to all of the Phil Jackson players I talked to, from guys who played a lot to guys who hardly ever played, but who also felt that Phil had respected them to such a degree as people that they wanted to play for him as Madden's guys did. And now, talk about where those guys are now. They're coaches, they're high school administrators, they're successful businessmen, they're long-term marriages, successful families, really stable producers of society. They contribute to society, and they continually went back to Phil's demeanor as something which did change their lives, in that many of them had played for many different coaches, and most coaches, not to generalize, do have a certain way of coaching. They it's not that they see their people as product, but their job is to motivate to win. And Phil's guys were really moved by Phil's ability to teach as well as coach. And it's real teaching. The books that he gave to his players, some read them, some didn't. The superstars never did. The role players did. Some of those books, they told me, changed their lives.
Mm.
Others told me Phil changed their lives. I will say this. This is my seventh book. I've never had more fun talking to the people about the person I was writing about or the subject I was doing. It was remarkable. We'd go off on tangents. We'd go off on philosophical tangents. We'd go off on strategic tangents. But it kept coming back to, no, it's this guy. I was lucky enough to have one guy who played about 4 minutes a game in 1 year. And then, you know, Phil let him go. And Corey Williams said, I just want you to know that was the greatest year of my life. Thank you, sir. And that's what he said to me. So basically, you know, I'm not saying the guy's a god by any means. I'm just saying I went in to look at what made the difference between Phil and the more conventional head coaches like Lombardi and Pat Riley and Billy Martin and Red Auerbach, et cetera. And I found that he did have the added dimension.
We're running a little short on time, but I want to ask you the question of do you see a completely different Phil Jackson as a player versus a coach, or are there clear delineations between the two?
No, I think he definitely, you can connect dot A to dot B. He was an unconventional player, possessed of certain limited skill set, very good in some ways, spent a lot of time on the bench, and therefore under Red Holtzman, a true teacher, and watched how a man treated young men. Holtzman was great at that. He won two championships. But as a player, he was unconventional, and as his teammates said, Phil could come off the bench and get four fouls or block four shots in 5 minutes. You never knew what was going to happen. All you knew is that it was going to be different. The game was going to change when Phil came in, because we never knew what he was going to do, and he didn't either. He was awkward, he was big, he was gangly, but he played an unconventional game. And I think transfer that metaphorically to the way he thinks and coaches, and I think you've connected two important dots. He understood as a player when he was successful that as a coach he could be successful by coming in from a different angle.
Peter Richman will be speaking on Saturday at Oblong Books at 6 o'clock in Millerton. His new book is Phil Jackson, Lord of the Rings. It is published by Blue Rider Press. Peter, have a great time at Oblong. Thanks so much for being with us, and congratulations on the book. It's a really fun read.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for taking the interest, and I really enjoyed talking.
Thank you very much. Again, it's Phil Jackson, Lord of the Rings. Peter will be at the Oblong Books and Music at 6 o'clock in Millerton. And you can find out more information on our website at wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.